From WNYC in New York, this is NPR's On the Media. Bob Garfield is away this week. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Last weekend, OTM producer Jamie York and I took a quick trip down to New Orleans because we heard that the floods had washed away much of the old media, and in the process of rebuilding, an extraordinary transformation was underway. When we arrived, the city was holding its much-delayed elections, ending in a runoff to be held next month between the current mayor, Ray Nagin, and Louisiana Lieutenant Governor Mitch Landrieu. There were 23 mayoral candidates, ranging from the serious to the ridiculous.
My favorite of the minor candidates is Manny Chevrolet Bruno, whose campaign slogan is, "A troubled man for troubled times."
David Meeks, city editor of the Times-Picayune, sits on a stoop just outside the French Quarter. His editorial board endorsed Ron Forman, a favorite of many in the white middle class, not a popular choice in most of the city. But the paper is more popular now than it's ever been, because the Big Easy ain't easy anymore, and neither is its newspaper.
We're scrappy, we're aggressive, we realize the future of the city is at stake. And we wonder, how long will it be before the first Times-Picayune comes off the press without the word Katrina in it? And the answer might be never.
Before the hurricane, David Meeks was the sports editor. You might ask, why would the paper entrust this crisis to a sports editor? Basically because while the staff was evacuating, Meeks saw that the streets were still drivable. He volunteered to ferry reporters around town in one of the paper's delivery trucks, and he convinced his editor, Jim Amos, to let him stay. Then he asked for volunteers. A couple of city desk reporters stepped forward. Also, the pop music critic, the art critic, the religion writer, and editorial writer.
We had a couple other reporters who were in the city. One had been stranded at the Emergency Operations Center. And then a few days later, we had our New Orleans Saints beat writer and one of the sports copy editors come down and join us.
And that was the team that won this year's Pulitzer Prize for breaking news.
You know, it's been the middle of the night, or I wake up and like, what am I doing here? How did I get here?
That's Tremaine Lee, the 27-year-old, now Pulitzer Prize-winning Cub reporter, the one who was stranded when the levees broke. He's in the newsroom as staffers cluster around TVs and computers watching the election returns. Lee moved to the city from Trenton, New Jersey, only 4 months ahead of the storm. But that was plenty of time to feel the rampant skepticism directed at his paper in the precincts he covered.
Very skeptical. They say, oh, we were the Picayune. I mean, mind you, you're in, like, you know, one of the worst neighborhoods, and I'm really trying to talk to you and say, look, you know, I want to make sure it's more than just a name and just another young brother that's just shot dead in the streets. You know, but I remember that time when it was me, Meeks, and Pearlstein were out at the convention center, and they were scrambling for these papers. And they were like, Picayune, you know, they were really coming at. So I realized that it was a lifeline. Now I think they feel that we're on their side, but we'll see what happens once the dust really settles.
You know, look at this. You just can't imagine. It's like something out of The Wizard of Oz where, like, a house falls on a car and it becomes normal down here.
David Lee Simmons, managing editor of the alternative weekly The Gambit, is taking us on a tour of the devastated Ninth Ward. As we pass through streets of wreckage, he marvels at the newfound pugnacity of the Times-Picayune.
One of our former freelancers, one of his first emails, he said, how does it feel to compete with the Daily Newspaper when the Daily Newspaper is acting like an alternative news weekly? And I thought it did speak to a kind of re-energizing that was going on at the Times-Picayune after the storm. I mean, I think that the challenge for them is to maintain that level of energy, and it's going to be interesting to see how they do that.
That energy is currently so intense, it's a wonder the city hasn't gone up in a blaze of media, in print, online, and on the airwaves.
We didn't have an hour of news at noon before the hurricane, and we now have 2 hours of morning news on Saturdays and 3 hours of morning news on Sundays, plus the evening newscast that we normally provide.
Mason Granger, president and general manager of WDSU, NBC's affiliate in New Orleans.
And probably most significantly, in the evenings Monday through Friday, we have a half hour of news at 10 o'clock, which is normal. But we also do a local program from 10:30 to 11 every night, Monday through Friday, which is geared specifically to Hurricane Katrina-related information and issues.
To accommodate that added half hour, WDSU actually pushed back the start of The Tonight Show, and they have the advertisers to support it. As to whether they have viewers, who knows? Right now, there are no ratings. Nielsen has packed up its books and left town.
As of the last rating book that we had, which was back in May, we were the second-rated station in the market. I don't know where we stand now, and we won't know until next February. So,
likewise, at WWL, the CBS affiliate that was number one back when there were ratings, innovation is in the air. Now it's added a web-only news show hosted by its broadcast anchors to reach the New Orleans diaspora, which extends from Baton Rouge to Bedminster, New Jersey, and beyond.
You know, the current absence of ratings for both radio and TV means that you don't get a report card the next day on your experiment.
David Walker, Times-Picayune TV critic, says that right now, broadcasting in New Orleans is like a jump ball. For instance, whether news will prevail on radio, as it has for the moment on television, is still up in the air. The winning format may well be music.
Salsa is sort of the sound of the city now because of the roofers and the people working on houses. There was a crew working right out my backyard, and I think it was probably the first time I'd ever heard that beat in my neighborhood.
That beat rocks a shopping strip parking lot in the largely Hispanic suburb of Kenner, courtesy of KGLA AM Radio Tropical. Ernesto Schweikert owns KGLA, which serves an exploding population of Hondurans, Guatemalans, and since Katrina, Mexicans who are working to rebuild the city. He lived in the station's trailer during the storm, powering his broadcasts with a gasoline-fueled generator with the help from media monoliths like Clear Channel. Sitting in the restaurant he owns nearby, Schweikert's quick to praise his bad weather friends.
They gave me information every day in English, but we were translating. And the community was very happy that we were on the air because they wanted to know where they had food, where there was water, where the Red Cross was.
And Clear Channel was providing that information for free, right?
Yes, all Clear Channel. They even came to give us gasoline.
Clear Channel opened its doors, but city and suburban officials never did.
I was traveling to the different city halls asking for help, avoiding us completely. I mean, I felt so little.
Schweikert says now big corporate advertisers are calling him and that the African-American and Anglo communities can no longer afford to ignore the Hispanics in their midst. He's currently in the process of buying the city's only other Spanish-language station, currently for sale, to keep it Spanish. And he's preparing to build the city's first Spanish-language TV station, which will be digital. In a city where tens of thousands are in the market for new TVs, most of which will be digital-ready, that means instant market penetration.
I can't wait for that because with the DT, the digital TV, high definition, now on one TV station, you can have three subcarriers. So on one station, like mine will be 42. So if you go to 42, you can watch, let's say, Telemundo. 42.1, Telefutura. 42.2, Univision. 42.3, Central America TV. Yeah, whatever, you know. And I think that now with the TV station, I think even the politicians are going to start having a little bit more respect for us.
You know, we have a scenario now where we can sit there and say, we're like a laboratory for everything new. Because whatever you're doing, I don't want leading edge, I want bleeding edge.
Greg Meffert is the city's chief technology officer, a position created by Nagin. And if the city is a lab, call him Oppenheimer, because he sees his mission as vital to the survival of a city that is fighting a war with nature. So while the state of emergency is still in place, he's defying state law in a rush to make basic wireless internet service as widely available as possible for free.
What we went through with the storm and with the communications breakdown, I can't take that chance again. I just can't. You had all these private telecom providers and all these networks went down. And at the time when it got really crazy, they said, well, a company can't afford to send somebody in there. I hear snipers are shooting at vendors. I'm not going to go fix the switch. And they didn't. But we were still here.
Meffert says his job will be dissolved if Mayor Nagin doesn't win the runoff. But he doubts that will end the project, even in the political swamp of New Orleans.
You'd have to really just sit there and say, I'm going to have to find a good reason to tell all you thousands of people that are using this right now for your businesses, I got to turn this off because some telecom lobbyist knows my daddy. You know, if you can get away with that, good luck. But I don't see it.
So far, he's got 4 square miles wired. He is shooting for 20.
There's a lot of things that we love that got thrown in that lake. But, you know, there's a lot of things that we didn't love that I think got thrown in there, too. You really do have a situation now where this city is very conscious of that it's fighting for itself. And that it's, in the end, even beyond all the Fed this and state that, the only people that really want New Orleans back big is New Orleans.
That's the principal finding to emerge from the media lab that is New Orleans. Access to high-quality information equals survival, and damn the bottom line. For Wi-Fi geeks and news managers, that means supplying information by any means necessary. For news consumers, that means taking personal responsibility to stay informed. For reporters, that means looking out for their audiences, even at the risk of losing them. In truth, the Times-Picayune has bored readers for years with headlines about such dry topics as the wetlands.
Long story short, if we had more of these wetlands protecting us, by the time the hurricanes got to the city, they'd be weaker and less dangerous.
Times-Picayune columnist Lolis Eli.
You may not be thinking about that because you're trying to figure out what you're going to do to rebuild your grandmother's house, because that's the last thing she wants in this world. She wants to be back in her house. You're trying to figure that out. You ain't worrying about no wetland loss. You ain't worrying about the ducks that ain't coming no more. You ain't worrying about the tourists. You're worrying about rebuilding that house. Well, part of our job, not unlike that of a physician, is to give you information that you may need, even if you don't understand that you need it.
New Orleanians know all too well that their city is ailing, and they consume barrels of information supplied by a reinvented media like a tonic, even if it's bitter, even if it's about wetlands or racism. The flood made that happen, but it didn't wash across America, not really. This experiment in media and the news consumers who love them seems to end at the water's edge. This is On the Media from NPR.